This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
History in 5 songs. With host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Hello once again, this is Martin Popoff. Welcome back to another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcasts. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this vast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast Network. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon Music, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right, this is episode 235. I'm calling this First Gear Singers. Grappled with this one a little bit. It may spawn another episode where we look at either fifth gear singers or first and fifth gear singers. So the issue here is that, I kind of got lists of a little bit of both, and there's obviously a little bit of carryover. My whole idea with this episode is I wanted to look at those singers that are essentially crooners, low energy singers. They may go high, but they're high is not particularly powerful. It may be a continuum of what they do low. There's less with these singers. There's going to be less evidence of really pushing air, which equals power. So pushing air equals power. So less power, less pushing air, possibly a thinning, possibly a struggling, possibly less pharyngeal voice, slash vocal fry. That's that whole idea. So essentially, I think there may be another episode here where we look at singers who have a really good first gear and a really good fifth gear. This is more like singers who, I would say all of these singers have a really good first gear. But yes, it's the fifth gear that they don't go into so often. Now, why am I talking first and fifth gear? Because no one cares about second, third, and fourth gear. It's a continuum. That's the other problem. It's a continuum. It's hard to even, distinguish when you're looking at the grayscale of second, third, and fourth gear. And when we get to one of our categories here of the five, we're going to discuss that a little further, how fifth gear means different things for different people. So, all right. By the way, I wanted to mention, one of the things I do is I go on Facebook and I share, only to relevant places like groups with the bands who are in the songs, blah, blah, blah. So I share on Facebook. I got put in Facebook jail the other day, and it's happened before. But this is one where you couldn't go in and find to put in a code and say I'm a real person and then they take you off. I have to wait the whole 6 days. The reason I'm telling you all this, well, I would love it if somebody had some advice. It's like, why is this version of Facebook jail different than the one I've been in before? But the main thing I want to say is please do me a favor and possibly share some of these episodes with friends you have that may may be interested in some of these episodes or whatever, or even share it around to some groups yourself. But just to see if I could bump my numbers a different way, because this last episode I just did, I really couldn't share anywhere, and I don't know how much difference it makes. Sometimes I think it doesn't make much difference at all. All this, these hours I spend sharing our Contrarians episodes and this and other things. Spread the word around a little bit with this one. I'd like to see, and I'll report back and see if the numbers bump up in any meaningful way with some extra sharing. So I also want to thank Mick Phelan for some of the, I brought up this idea and he struggled with some examples and stuff. And I think maybe some of the things Mick came up with are going to fit better if I do a first and fifth gear episode. So yes, episode 235, First Gear Singers. Let's listen to our first selection here and we shall discuss. This is Blue Oyster Cult with Mirrors. A mirror is a negative space with a All right, so I've always had this feeling about Blue Oyster Cult. Doing these panel books, it's been really cool. So we've got the recent book, Dominance and Submission, the Blue Oyster Cult Canon, where, you know, it was, I assembled a big panel of buddies who really know their Blue Oyster Cult, and we went through things. So a lot of these concepts come up. A lot of great new concepts or ways of thinking about bands I haven't thought about come up when I'm doing these books. And one thing I believe was discussed a few times. I mean, times I've always had this idea anyways. But Blue Oyster Cult's a funny band in that, number one, this did come up, the fact that they're always considered kind of a hard rock, heavy metal band, and that could be the song titles, the album covers, the occasional heavy song, etc., etc. But one of the funny things about Blue Oyster Cult is their two main singers, and more, which we'll get to in a second, but their two main singers, so this is Donald Buck Dharma Roser on Mirrors, the great Mirrors album. You know, I've called this my favorite Blue Oyster Cult album of all time. I've probably changed my mind recently. It's probably more Fire of Unknown Origin, but this is a good example of Buck Dharma being this crooner. So he's more of a traditional singer, someone who doesn't have to bust up and make his vocal cords bleed to do what he does. And he essentially always is one of these first gear singers. So he's a crooner, right? It's the old Frank Sinatra, Michael Bublé crooning idea, right? So, and I wanted to pick a song to play a clip from that is essentially a hard rock song to show what that's like on there. Now, I've often thought, you know, people say things like, oh, we do this way, and it makes the heavier sound even heavier, you know, that trope. And I usually don't believe that trope. And I don't have the answer. I almost don't believe that trope when it comes to this idea of does the low energy first gear singing on a heavy Blue Oyster Cult song make the song sound heavier? I don't know. There's a funny attitude about we're playing this heavy music, but I'm staying cool, so I'm not going to get hysterical sort of thing. So it's almost like, it's like, oh, look how heavy we are, and I'm not even excited about it. So there's something cool about that kind of idea with this, when you hear just kind of regular singing on top of heavy music, right? Now, Eric Bloom's kind of the same thing. Eric Bloom is generally a first gear, a little bit into second gear kind of singer, and he does try to use his fifth gear, and obviously he's getting older, and, you know, it's going to degrade over time, but... when he uses his fifth gear, it's not as impressive as his richer first to second gear sort of voice. So even he is that kind of a singer as well. I think Buck is more so. And then moving into, you know, this is one of those bands with four singers. So we've got Joe Bouchard. He actually does like to use his fifth gear a fair bit. But Joe and Albert both have kind of like weaker voices, and you don't know what would be the right gear, and they probably never really use their right gear too often kind of thing. But Joe is kind of, you know, you think of something like Fallen Angel, and there's where you get the Roger Daltrey out of him, which is the higher gear. But so generally speaking, those two guys are also first gear singers. So the funny thing is, all the singers in Blue Oyster Cult are not your typical heavy metal, pushing a lot of air, power, shrieking singers. Other ones like this, again, this is directly related to doing this panel book, but Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy, man, he is absolutely one of these low-energy crooner singers. It's the laid-back cool of Phil that we all love, but it's really funny when you go through the catalog and start noticing that they've got all these, you know, pretty rock and hard rock songs, but Phil never has to do a heck of a lot of work. And when we know he does do a lot of work later in life, we know it kind of fails, and that's where we start saying, you know, where you start seeing the vocal fry, because you're not used to seeing vocal fry out of Phil. So when you start singing it, you go, oh, there's the hard living, you know, coming out of him. And the other one that's like this is kind of interesting is Phil Mogg from UFO, same kind of thing, where you definitely get a guy who, people basically say he doesn't have that great of a voice, and I would kind of agree with that. The voice isn't great, the singing is fairly top-notch. Like, he's got a good grasp of the art of singing. But again, this is a guy with a limited range, and he's not the big go up and sing vocal fry thing. So when you get up there, you're not happy about it. You're not happy about listening to Phil when he's pushing hard, because he's going to struggle up at that end. So it's funny. He's not a guy with the lowest voice in the world. But he basically uses that voice that he has in First Gear, basically. And Ian Gillan is kind of a funny one. So this is a guy that I probably should include in the other episode, so I won't talk about him too much, but he's become a lot more of a First Gear singer guy over the years, and that's where we feel comfortable and we like him the most. Paul Rogers, kind of the same thing. Peter Steele, from Typo Negative, there are these guys with these really low voices who like to exploit that low voice, and he's one of those guys. Don Dokken is a really interesting one, because people have said one of the distinct things about the band Dokken is that so it's a little bit like Joey Belladonna in Anthrax. One of the distinct things about that situation was you had a standard heavy metal semi-operatic singer on top of thrash, and a very kind of like streetwise New York kind of thrash. So that is a distinct thing about Anthrax. Same thing in the hair metal department. Don Dokken is considered one of these guys with like a sweet, I'm not going to push a lot of air, I'm not going to put a lot of effort into this sort of voice when he's singing. So it's a good voice. It's not the greatest singing ever, and it's not even the greatest voice ever, but it's competent in both of those areas. Competence shouldn't even apply to your voice, really. I mean, that's unfair to the person, because that's just like your height almost, right? The funny thing about Don Dokken is there are these fairly heavy songs going on around him with a big beat of Mick Brown and the wild guitar work and everything, and he's just you know, kind of crooning away, you know, fairly unremarkable in many ways. Mick Phelan also says Chino Marino, Josh Homme, and Mark Lanegan as well. Kind of interesting. Yeah, Josh is a funny one in this department as well. So, all right, let's take a short break. We'll be right back. All right, back again here. Episode 235, First Gear Singers. This one might surprise you a little bit. Take a listen. Robert Plant with Carry Fire.
Just like they do for me, well, so I do for you.
Okay, so I wanted to put him here. This is a guy who absolutely has got to be in the other episode as well. But the category is a little bit, it's him and Geddy Lee, more or less. We could probably find other examples as well. But Robert Plant, much more than Geddy Lee, I think is this guy. And again, I've got a panel book coming out, Robert Plant album by album. What did I call it? Pictures at 11, Robert Plant album by album. And going through all of his later stuff, the really interesting thing here is, so in the old days, And I won't go into this too much because, again, maybe we'll save it for the other episode. But in the old days, you loved his first gear and you loved his fifth gear. I'll just leave it at that. So what's happened now and what's happened over time? So into the middle era of Robert Plant's career, it's almost like Geddy Lee's last era, or middle and last combined, where he sang a lot more and he had kind of a weaker fifth gear. But he still used it, sort of thing, or went there and tried to use it, flirted with the fifth gear kind of thing. But in later years, across all these albums, like 2017's Carry Fire, but all of this Alison Krauss kind of thing and Lullaby and The Ceaseless Roar, all of these records, he's... And this is almost irrelevant, but what he has done is he's turned the entire volume down on the band. So they're these rootsy, crusty, antique-y, obscure sort of sounds. The idea, almost amusingly, it's almost like the band in Creedence Clearwater Revival, where he's making like old-timey music that could have been made, you know, bluegrass and Americana and stuff. But he purposely even records with kind of like distorted, scratchy 45 or 78 sounds, so it sounds even older. But the point is whether he turns down the music or not, he's a singer who really, I think, has discovered, well, first of all, with age, he's probably discovered that his fifth gear is shot and fourth gear probably isn't even convincing. But one of the interesting things about Robert Plant is that he's got this beautiful, beautiful voice in first gear, and he's, you know, a really good singer. He's done it for a long time. So he's one of the most trained singers out there, but basically he's probably even a better singer than he ever used to be. And he's, you know, to his delight, it seems, if I could get inside his head for a minute, to his delight, he's discovered no matter how old he gets, he's got a beautiful, beautiful voice. But he should keep it in first gear, or almost more like, even if he wants to use second or third gear, it's almost like he's smart enough to realize that it's a real treasure what he's got in first gear. So he does a lot of singing in first gear. So he's really close to the mic often. He's really high in the mix, and he's almost like whispering and mumbling half of these songs. So that's kind of a cool thing you get with Robert Plant. Geddy Lee, on the other hand, he went through his singing period. These albums that he sort of justifies as being his I Learned How to Sing Better albums, like Presto and Roll the Bones. And then as time goes on, as he told me one time, probably in our first interview years ago, he says, I took my shriek and, you know, I it's on the shelf at Kresge's or whatever kind of thing, right? So the funny thing about, the parallel between him and Robert Plant is they both had this fifth gear that sounded almost like a different person, like a different voice. And with Geddy, when he uses anything approaching fifth gear or fourth gear, it doesn't even sound like the same person who was in fifth gear in the '70s kind of thing. So that's kind of interesting, but he doesn't really use it either. He's got a little bit of that same problem, with the degradation of age, where when he uses a higher gear, he kind of goes into this strange sort of yodeling sound. It's a little bit like the quirk of Ian Anderson in Jethro Tull, but we'll get to that in a sec. That's a little different. But so he's got this gear he uses, but A, it's weaker. You can tell he's not putting the enthusiasm and power into it. It's more brief. It's usually down in the mix, and it's got this kind of yodeling quality. So it's not that amazing voice that he had and used in the 70s that, you know, was always mentioned in all the reviews all the time, because it was just this crazy, crazy voice. What else? So David Lee, let's leave David Lee Roth. I think David Lee Roth is going to be a great example of first and fifth gear. Mick Phelan, I'm just going to read this word for word because I thought this was interesting. He said that Dave Grohl is a fifth gear failure. The charm at the start was the fragile voice, his backing vocals on Dumb on Unplugged, his first lead vocal credit, Marigold. It was a contrast occurred at Time Progressed. As Time Progressed, we saw less of this. Less of that and more screaming. It made the Foos Arena Stadium's megastars, but not the best use of his voice. He even tries Ramble On live. When mere mortals like Dave try this, they show their limitations as singers. Grohl, a god on the kit, a limited vocalist. I prefer him in relaxed lanes. See the beautiful Chasing Birds from Medicine at Midnight. Interesting. All right, let's move on to our third selection here. This is Yes with Arriving UFO.
Arriving through the eons of time's immortal power of the future to behold. Vessels of a different impression, none that we could ever hope to have known. So look out.
Ah, yes, the much denigrated Tormato album, right? 1978. Why I wanted to pick this clip was it shows John Anderson's wide range. Now, the idea here, the category here is kind of prog. I want to talk about some of these prog guys. So John Anderson is a guy who, it's a continuum with him. He's a singer with this strange high voice, but there's no variation in what he does. It's essentially this very nice, sweet, twee, elf, pixie, brownie little singing voice, whether he's in first gear or whether he's in fifth gear. It just goes higher, right? And I wanted to show that range in here. So that's an interesting thing about him. When we go over to Genesis, again, I won't go into it too much because maybe I'll save this for the other episode, but I think Peter Gabriel and Phil Collins have both gears. I think they have both a first gear and a fifth gear. And Ian Anderson, again, as I alluded to, I think he's a guy that absolutely has no fifth gear, never did have a fifth gear. He's like the distinguished, wise, fox hunting Englishman kind of guy. You know, you think of how he looks and how he dresses and how he carries himself and what he's like in interviews. He's a very smart guy, but he strikes me as an aristocratic singer. So he's got this beautiful, beautiful, rich voice, and he knows that it works best in first gear. But he did have this gear that, like, he felt confident going into the high range in the old days, but now it just sounds kind of like don't do that, Ian, sort of thing. And he pulls away from the mic and he does that trailing off into the ether thing, and you just don't want him to do that. Now he does that more or less out of necessity, because they attract a big crowd live. And so as a touring act, you know, he's out there and he has to do the old songs, and they have that high range. So he's struggling with the high end, but I don't think he ever particularly had an amazing fifth gear. John Wetton is an interesting case. I've talked about him before. So sticking in this prog category, I feel like this guy has... It's almost like he's always pushing air. I don't think he has a particularly good fifth gear, so let's just call him a first gear. I definitely would call him actually a first gear only singer, although he's always been considered the consummate singer. But I think that's because people are in love with his voice, and I think they like his voice more so when it is in first or second gear sort of thing. So yeah, when he gets up high, it sounds like you're worried that he's going to hit the note, right? That's kind of the problem with him. Getting a little bit off prog, but, you know, well, actually I'll mention this as well. Ozzy is a funny case. Ozzy is a little bit like a John Anderson, in that he's got this interesting, naturally higher voice. And he does use vocal fry a little bit, but it almost seems like it's not by choice. But he seems more like a continuum, and obviously he doesn't have a great range. And, and he's probably not even the greatest singer, right, in terms of accuracy. But, you know, he kind of was in the past. I mean, you watch a lot of that live stuff, and he was pretty good. But, no, he's more of a first-gear singer as well. But sticking in the idea of not heavy rock, Morrissey is a perfect example of this. Morrissey is your standard crooner. He just has an interesting voice, and he uses it more or less in first gear, a little bit of second gear, but he's not a power singer. Lou Reed's kind of the same thing. Lou Reed is almost even more down into the mumbling range. Nick Drake is down into the Well, he's a crooner, but he's also a whisperer. Richard Thompson, Mick Phelan mentioned Richard Thompson and Nick Drake, right? Pink Floyd staying in Prague. I think David Gilmour is a perfect example of someone who doesn't even try any gear above first gear. He's got a beautiful voice, and everything he does is more or less in first gear. Roger Waters, on the other hand, is a funny case because, again, my favorite Roger Waters voice is the first gear voice. So he tries, he has an attempt at a fifth gear. It's kind of this when he gets hysterical or sounds like he's trying to sound a little crazy, right? So he's got this funny character that he goes into at that fifth gear, but you can't qualify that as a fifth gear voice. It's not a powerhouse voice. It's not particularly good sounding. It's a little bit like, fingernails on a chalkboard kind of thing. But yes, David Gilmour and Roger Waters, perfect examples of first gear singers, and also Syd Barrett, same kind of thing. Mick, here I'm going to read something else. He says, talking of floating, Syd Barrett does it to great effect on anything off Piper, but I love Paintbox, which you'll find on the Relics album. It's the gentle, beautiful voice, very English, that was carried on a bit if you think of Fearless and Saint-Tropez on Metal. Isn't that a more attractive Floyd than the pushy Young Lust on the Wall? Are they worse when air is pushed? So I'm sure he's picking up some of this sort of vocabulary for me, because I always talk about this pushing air thing, this power thing. But yes, exactly. Pink Floyd fits in there perfectly. All right, so let's move on to our fourth selection here. This is Kate Bush with Sat in Your Lap. All right, so this category is women singers, woman singers. My idea here, I've always had this idea that women singers have a better job at staying in good shape as they get into older age, because they are basically all John Andersons, right? They're not singers that are ratching out, ruining their voice. They're just natural singers. They don't have to, you know, the thing about having a high voice isn't one of their problems. It's not a challenge for them. They have a high voice naturally. So essentially, many more of them are straight, proper, technical, doing it right, not worried, not having the challenge of singing high singers. So Kate Bush is a great example. I wanted to put Sat in Your Lap because it shows a little bit of when she tries vocal fry, but it's more like just a little bit of an effect. It's not anything, and you get power out of Kate Bush as well, but it's that woman singer power where it's like, okay, I'm gradually going up. It's gray area. I'm getting higher and higher, and necessarily I do have to push a little more air. A female vocalist that I feel does have something that feels a little bit more like a fifth gear is Anne Wilson. But it's still the continuum, but it sounds like there's more use of power, or power is needed, and it can get a little nastier with the voice, sort of thing. But yeah, Kate Bush is the ultimate delicate, whispery, mumbly, and just, you know, correct low singer. She's always up in the mix. They're her albums, but it's kind of like she's got this bag of tricks, and some of those tricks go into a certain kind of amusing fifth gear sort of thing, right? Chrissy Hynde, Sandy Denny, Nightwish, Donna Godshow from Grateful Dead, all, you know, you think of Judy Dibble from Trader Horn. I did that episode of these great old rare obscure albums. There's a lot of sleepy, quiet, laid back vocals in the female vocal thing. And like I say, it's more of a continuum when they do go high sort of thing. So I guess my conclusion there is that I would think you don't think of fifth gear when you think of female vocals that much, because it is a continuum, and most of them are just naturally singers because the female voice is just a good singing voice and it's higher and all that stuff, that thing that you like as a challenge at a vocal. So I think most of the time it doesn't cross their mind in a big way to be out of anything other than first or second gear. All right, let's move on to our last selection here. Take a listen to this. This is ZZ Top with Rhythmine. Drinking mixes for the fire with my heart bangs. In a silver continent. Wide as hell and knowing things. The punch again on Rhythmine. Okay, so I wanted to pick ZZ Top because Billy Gibbons is an interesting example of he uses a fifth gear, but you're not happy about it. What you like the most out of Billy Gibbons, well, he actually does some really cool things in fifth gear as well. But for the fifth gear singer in the band, you want Dusty Hill, right? Sadly, we lost him recently, but Dusty Hill is the guy you go to for that fifth gear where you're really convinced about the fifth gear. Billy, on the other hand, is I wanted to pick him because he's getting even low down and more of a bluesy guy, and there's some hilarious things across, particularly Mescalero. Mescalero definitely has, in fact, the song Mescalero is like this, but he's taken that first gear to an extreme where he's almost a guy who has three or four different first gears. And because he's just this great bluesman, he's really, exploiting that sort of thing. And you get, the parallel in, Bachman Turner Overdrive, where you've got Fred Turner, doing the Dusty Hill, the pushing air, the hollering, right? The hollering, the pharyngeal, the vocal fry, and Randy Bachman is your weak voice, your kind of Albert Bouchard voice, where, you know, he's not particularly great in any gear, but he's more of a first gear singer, and if he does go high, it's less convincing sort of thing. So that's kind of interesting. I wanted to mention Kiss as well, because Kiss is an interesting one where, your favorite singing out of three of the guys in Kiss, which would be Ace, Peter, and Paul, are more of your fifth gear singing. And Gene is kind of the standout guy where, you really get into his singing in first gear. He's a really good sonorous first gear singer. So that's kind of cool. And he also has a pretty interesting fifth gear, but he stays away from it a little more often. So he's almost like a little bit of a guy who it seems like he realizes he's got this great first gear, and so he uses it the most, and he's really good at it. Rolling Stones is a funny one because I think Mick Jagger has both gears, and he's not particularly great at the high gear. He becomes more of a shouter. But they've got this other singer in the band, Keith Richards, who is definitely just a first gear singer. So he's a perfect example of this here as well. There you go. So that is our, I hopefully stayed mostly on topic and talked about singers who are mostly first gear singers. If you like the show and want to support future episodes, please go to ko-fi.com/MartinPopoff. Hit that red support button. Buy me a coffee or a pint. This week, I would like to thank Joe Becht, Andy at Black Sugar Transmission, Lee Fordham, Augustin Garcia de Prittis. I have a feeling I left him out last time. He's always a regular. Great, great loyal supporter. And obviously, you know this as well, but he is the moderator of the page. And he even manages our tribe page, right? The Facebook page that was based on that old metal collector book. But yeah, he keeps track of everything on the History of in Five Songs Facebook page. So yes, thank you, Augustin. Steve Polari, David Rhea, very generous. David came by. I get this sometimes where he's like, oh, I don't do the usual thing. So here's a kind of a lump sum so that was really nice. But he came by just yesterday, actually, and picked up some books and stuff as well. Here's an interesting point too. Him and Augustin, they own some of the originals of these drawings that I've been doing for Flaming Telepaths. Maginos Expanded and Specified, and right now at layout, basically approved, there's going to be coming Perfect Water, the Rebel Imaginos, which I think it's the coolest thing I've ever done. So that's coming soon. For all your book needs, you can go to martinpopoff.com. As usual, the latest ones out are the Bluest Occult panel book. Like I was saying in this episode, you're going to be getting a Thin Lizzy panel book and a Robert Plant panel book pretty much in March. Van Halen at 50 coming in March, and out right now I still have The Who, the 50th anniversary of Quadrophenia, the Pink Floyd anniversary book, and The Kiss at 50. There you go. Let me know what you think. This one could be interesting. I get the feeling I've missed a few, or I get the feeling I'm going to get some complaints of saying, you're an idiot. You know, this guy has a great fifth gear, right? Kind of thing. So, but yeah, I kind of leaned, and I hope I got these right. But let's see what you guys say on the Facebook, whether there are some glaring. I'm sure there's tons and tons and tons, because singing is singing, right? So there's going to be many, many, many examples of people who stick in a first gear and have a great first gear. But I wonder if I kind of went through most of these singers and played a bunch of extra songs, and I almost feel like there's one or two where I'm missing the fact that they have a quite well used fifth gear or a great fifth gear. But yeah, I think I got it roughly correct. But yeah, go play some Thin Lizzy.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at R&R Archaeology.